The chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Mac Thornberry, wants to alter the chain of command in the defense acquisition reform process, but his bill also zeroes in on the Pentagon's IT acquisition process. Trey Hodgkins is Senior Vice President for Public Sector at the Information Technology Alliance for Public Sector and my first guest on Industry Chatter today. He says the details of the bipartisan bill will help the Defense Department keep its technological edge. Trey, it's great to talk to you again, as always. What is it about Congressman Thornberry's bill, and we need to give credit to the ranking member of HASC, Adam Smith of Washington. What is it about this legislation that you like, Trey? Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Francis, for having me. And you make a good point noting the authors. It's important to reference that this is a bipartisan proposal, and we think it is strongly positioned to move forward. So those of us in industry should be paying attention to it. It's also very important because it's sort of the first shot in what Chairman Thornberry has described as potentially a multi-year effort to address in manageable pieces how the government acquires things. And for my perspective, it's important to look at this at DOD because frequently they are the leader, of course, or many others follow. And we see many of the challenges that they're trying to address here replicated on the civilian side. And so we see this as longer term, looking at many of the similar or the exact changes for government-wide application. So there's a number of sort of threshold issues that are critical to moving this forward, and it's important that we've finally gotten some language we can look at out of this process. It's been some months coming, and we're very pleased that it's out there. The points you raised, specific points you raised, it touches on a number of major elements here. It talks about workforce development issues, which are critical in the dialogue we've had, is that we have to make sure that the government workforce has the tools it needs and adequate funding to appropriately continue to train them and advance their careers. There are some elements that directly address major defense acquisition programs, or MDAPs, and then major automated information systems, or MAIS, addresses who will be taking which steps in the acquisition processes and changes around that, because some cases it upends that process. And frankly, much of this we're still examining to understand the ramifications since it was introduced yesterday. There's a piece on service contracting. There's several things related to the industrial base and making sure that we have access to the right companies and are bringing in the right innovations. And then there's several other elements that relate to various the odd bits and parts here, but collectively are important in the contracting and oversight realm that are also included here.
The industrial-based piece of this, I think, is the part that is most relevant to the people that are trying to do business with the government, because the good news could be it will open opportunities to companies that have not done business with the government before, and that's certainly one of the goals of better buying power, the latest iteration at least. The bad news could be if you're one of the companies that gets elbowed out of the way by one of these new companies that traditionally hasn't been a player in the defense contracting space. Do we have a sense yet of how any of that might affect any of the people that are already trying to do business with the government, or is this going to be a case of we have to wait and see what develops, and the people who are currently doing business with the government need to up their games to make sure they can continue to compete?
Well, I think on a variety of fronts, people in the government space have had to up their game and continue to have to do so to remain competitive. These particular provisions, many of them focus on small business and small business access. The SBIR, the Innovative Research Program, for example, is an element here. There is an elevation of the simplified acquisition threshold to $500,000. And you're correct. Some of the implications of moves of that sort may be that companies who traditionally had niche spaces, perhaps, or some segment of the market may find that there are new competitors who don't have the same rules, because under these, raising the simplified acquisition threshold, the rules are different and what the compliance requirements are different. And so, yeah, there will be some changes of that sort. We also agree, though, that it's important to make sure that these companies have access to the market and that we encourage them to come to the market with their innovative products. It's also interesting, though, because it's sort of is proof in the pudding, because as we move to make things easier, sort of at the lower contracting tiers, it is direct and, you know, front and center evidence that we continue to have problems with the acquisition process. So it's the, it is an example, an illustration of the need to continue the focus I talked about initially that is not going to happen in one piece of legislation. The whole process needs a revisit and a relook, and we're just starting that. And as long as we have to carve out access to the market with a reduced compliance burden or other limitations or barriers, then that's proof that the overall process still has significant challenges or flaws.
Trey Hodkins of the Information Technology Alliance for Public Sector. This is the latest in a long line of pieces of legislation that deal with defense acquisition reform. The last major one that I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, Trey, was the bill that Senator McCain and Senator Levin got through. What was that, 2 or 3 years ago now that's been?
Yeah, that was the nickname was that was SARA, the Weapons Systems Acquisition Reform Act, which also primarily focused on major defense acquisition programs. And of course, before that was one that Chairman Davis had passed called the Service Acquisition Reform Act. And there is a alphabet soup of alphabet soup trail here of you know, different acquisition reform proposals back to the mid '90s. We in industry, or many of us, have argued that we are in many ways back where we were when the government began the reforms in the mid-90s. We have reached a point of disconnect between what goes on in the commercial market marketplace, government disconnect from access to innovative products and services. And we think that the very deliberate process they entered into in that time frame is probably sorely needed today, because we didn't get where we are today overnight. We need to take a reasoned and deliberate approach to examining what the challenges are and what makes sense in today. Many of the technologies and many of the companies that are competing today didn't exist at that time. And so we need to examine all of the processes in that light and also look at where is technology going, and make sure we're not locking out capabilities in the future because of something we do today. And, you know, we're encouraging them to look at this. This legislation is important, but we continue to encourage them that a group of experts who can examine regulations, legislation, and other guidance that impacts these processes and then come out with a wholesale set of recommendations is where we think we ought to end up.
I'm struck by the similarity of some of the provisions of this bill to recommendations that you gave the House and Senate Armed Services Committees last year, Trey.
That's correct. You know, we've had a focus around access to commercial items and how the government, what steps the government puts in place to actually acquire commercial items. It's important for the purely commercial companies, obviously, but it's also important for the integrators who look to use innovations from the commercial marketplace, not only to bring technological differentiation to what they want to compete with, but also to help them drive the cost down and make their products and services competitive in this market. So that's a major focus that we've had and will continue to have. There are elements of that in here. There's some repeals of reporting burdens, reporting requirements that we've defined in the committee agrees are perhaps burdensome and should be addressed. So there's a number of things here. Some of the workforce development, again, is an area where we've really looked at and believe that there are a number of things we can do to enhance the career path, build a career path, and then create in a more permanent fashion funding to bring people in and give them the skill sets and tools they need. So one thing they do is amend and modify the Defense Acquisition Workforce Development Fund, but that's a great example of something that we think ought to extend to the government side, the civilian side. And we ought to have an analogy on the civilian side that is as robust as the defense one is and can create the resources for that activity that we currently see on the defense side.
It is no doubt that you're pleased with what Chairman Thornberry and Ranking Member Smith are proposing here, but we still have a whole other chamber to deal with. Do we have any sense of where Senator McCain and the Senate Armed Services Committee wants to go with this?
We do. We've had some good conversations with them. Number one, I think it's important to note that they are aligned philosophically with the House. and setting acquisition reform writ large is a priority and a major one. I think that they will emphasize and focus on other elements. I think there's also going to be some significant alignment around things like workforce. That one seems to consistently come up as a universally supported initiative that anything of the sort needs to include. We'll wait and see. They're about a month behind the House, I would suggest. And so they are putting together and finalizing the concepts they want to work on, and they'll be moving forward to mature and perfect those. And, of course, this bill, the process for this bill is that Mr. Thornberry very intentionally released it this week so that it'll have about 30 days out there for the public to look at it. We're looking at it. He has solicited feedback and comments. There's some questions that we have that we want to try and work with them to get answered and clarifications. It's also important to point to people, there's a report language document that goes with this, and there's a number of things that perhaps didn't lend themselves directly to statutory language, but are initiatives or directives the committee wanted to have the department undertake. And so if you're taking a deep dive look at this, you should also look at the report language. There's a lot there as well, and it also explains the reasons for some of the other provisions. But I think we're going to have a great opportunity for success here with this legislation. It'll probably, in all likelihood, successfully be attached to the NDAA in the House. I can't foresee why the chairman couldn't get something like this on his own bill. And in the Senate, I think we'll see something else, and we'll have a good opportunity to reconcile those and get them passed.